Hi, this is Paul. Over the weekend, I finally had a chance to listen to the Barry Weiss, Jordan Peterson conversation, and I thought it was, again, one of, this could be a high point in the second wave. I think the Jordan Peterson second wave could be very different from the first wave. And this conversation touched on, I think, what's at the heart of both of them. And it's a beating religious heart. In many ways, and I've wrestled a lot with how to address this video because there's so much in it. But in order to address something like this, you really have to sort of begin at the core, at the peak of the hierarchy, at the religious statements by both of them. And after that, begin to take apart the subsidiary pieces. Because what lies beneath this is, I think, as now postmodernity continues to come into focus, as modernity continues to recede, as the drowsiness of secularism, which is in some ways sort of a diluted version, diluted version of Christianity is also receding with modernity. What we see in Jordan Peterson and Barry Weiss are two deeply religious people. Now, what do I mean by religious? Again, I've talked before about religion as worldview and religion as it is often viewed through the secular lens, through the secular frame. You can hear this from the New Atheists. Religion has something to do with supernatural beings or God construed as a super thing in a meta-divine realm. And what Jordan and Barry wrestle with here is the decline of that civilization, and they both want to fight for it. But in many ways, and Barry Weiss, I think partly because of her lifestyle choices, embodies some of the contradictions of this moment. There's no going back. And there's almost a sense with some people like, no, we've reached it right now. Let's not go any further. And of course, many who are more progressive say, no, we need to go further and further and further. But there's not a tremendous amount of clarity about where that further leads to. And we've talked a lot on this channel about telos, ends, goals, some of this. So both Jordan and Barry are in many ways on the same side, voicing some of the same ideas. But well, let's get jump in, because Jordan tells about a dream here, which I think in many ways just really encapsulates a lot of this. So I'm going to begin it at the end of this video. And as sometimes happens, I'll talk about the end. It'll be, okay, I'm done with it, and then I won't treat it. But the section about institutional racism is dealing with, and that's a long section of this video, and it's woven within her story. This entire video is seeking Jordan, asking her, why did you leave the New York Times? And just at the end, what are you doing now with Substack? It's the whole video. But of course, they go in Jordan Peterson fashion all through other various places. And I think this conversation is a good one in order to, I think, for some who have sort of been in the fog of secularity instead of sort of the bright air of the Christianity that in which secularity makes its fog. You know, I think about the prologue to the Gospel of John. You have, as in the prologue to the Gospel, as you have in the Gospel of John, as you have in 1 John especially, the Johannine parts of the New Testament are some of the most black and white, good and bad, Antichrist, Christ versus Antichrist, on and off, binary, antithesis-laden elements of the New Testament. Secularism is sort of a fog. It's not darkness, but there's sort of a bright fog that permits a lot of what we have benefited from and suffered from in our culture. And now the fog is burning off, and so things are getting black and white, binary, good and bad, polarized again. But neither of these individuals want that. Jordan has continued to show a reticence to embracing Christianity as such. And fair enough, I'm a Protestant, and in some ways the fog of secularism is a product of this enormous conflict that was the Protestant Reformation, and we're still sorting it out. But Barry Weiss, of course, early in the conversation, she says, I've studied extensively the history of the Jews. She's Jewish. She's also a married lesbian. And she says she's basically derived her, I'll say, she's derived her navigational ability from that history. Now, again, in secular parlance, you can say, you can talk about morality and history sort of out there, but obviously what she studied is a deeply religious subject, and her gyroscope has been calibrated by that religious history all the way up until the present. So all of those ideas are really at play in this conversation, and it could bear scrutiny to sort of tease them out and work them forward. But I wanted to put that on the map before we would go through elements of this conversation, because if you see that, the other elements of the conversation make more sense, okay? And there's some issues, especially with the systemic racism section, where I want to talk about three concepts that I've been working with. I've been talking about data and narrative, but I want to talk about icons as well in terms of that, the relationship of that. And I think those three ideas are a good way into this question of systemic racism. How should we as a society deal with it? What's going on with our language and political games with respect to these things? Again, the conversation was outstanding. But this, the haunting question of secularity, which is being asked again and again, which is, can you actually have a society without a religious underpinning? And a lot of people are a little foggy on, and maybe we all are, the fog of secularity. What do we mean by religious there? Because, you know, what comes through with Jordan and Barry Weiss and Sam Harris and just about everyone else in Western society is the assumed, a good bit of the inherited assumed morality of Jesus. And that is played out in this realm. And again, Tom Holland's Dominion, that's simply assumed and it's unrecognized. And if it's assumed and unrecognized, it sort of has an existence in the cloud, as it were. It's around us. We pick it up from each other. We like it. We want to maintain it. But we don't exactly know how. Because secularity is sort of, in some ways, a bright fog. It's not darkness. It's not light. It's a bright fog. So let's jump in here at the end, and then I'll go to the end, and then I'll see what I do.
Tell me the end of the story. So now you're on Substack.
Oh, God, there's so much that's happened. We've drawn out the like a resignation over 2 hours, but I hope we fit other things that are of interest into it. So now I'm on Substack, like I think a lot of heterodox journalists who don't fit in with a tribe are also on Substack, and I think it's
now that comment there that don't fit in with a tribe. Everybody needs a tribe. You know, we often talk about tribalism in negative terms. There's a positive aspect to tribalism in positive terms, and because everybody needs a tribe, because you can't do it alone. And she's going to talk about how that functions in terms of journalism. One of the interesting pieces, which, again, I want to go back through, at one, you know, one of the things that haunts this talk is the fall of what these two see as the golden age, the twilight of the golden age. And because she's going to give an impassioned, I think a very correct appeal for institutions. And there's a segment a little bit earlier where she says some things and, you know, one of you sent me an email and said, she's talking estuary, and she is. But there has to be an instantiation, and it can't be simply individuals. And in my last videos where I talked about Peterson and the ones with David Fuller and Jonathan Rowson, Peterson and individuals, yeah, the weakness of his individualism comes into play here. And so here you have Barry Weiss. Basically, Substack has sort of become a refugee for people who no longer fit into the institutions that they used to call home, but have been purified out of them. Okay, there have been heresy trials and struggle sessions, and these people have been squeezed out. And so she very much wants to see new institutions, but for now it's Substack because one must eat.
Extremely interesting, the Fox journalists who interest into it. So now I'm on Substack, I think a lot of heterodox journalists who don't fit in with a tribe are also on Substack. And I think it's extremely interesting. The thing that I think is a challenge.
It's like an IDW of journalists.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that I think is challenging, right, is.
It's good to see Peterson's sense of humor back.
If you're like a dentist or an accountant or a lawyer, and I meet a lot of these people, and they say, I don't trust the New York Times anymore, what do I read? Well, it's a really dissatisfying answer, because I'm like, well, you need to subscribe to these 10 Substacks and listen to these 5 podcasts and follow these 30 people on Twitter. No, like, that's not going to work.
Okay, right there. Human beings, tribes, institutions, we need them. I was just thinking about, of course, the Southern Baptist Convention is going on now, and with all the press that's digging up. Institutions are funny things, and what we tend to do is we create looser institutions when they feel them too constrained, but there's always this, you know, one of the things that I thought about this is, of course, John Vervaeke's opponent processing. There's always these dynamics of opponent processing. There's not too much, not too little, trying to find the right mix. And so now with at least her conceptualization of the goodness of the New York Times being blown apart by the events that she describes throughout this video, she's looking for a new creation. She's looking for a something around which a community can coalesce. Now, one of the videos that I haven't yet treated, but was an outstanding video, was Jonathan Peugeot and Rafe Kelly. It's on Rafe Kelly's channel. Because I thought they really, Rafe Kelly is a terrific conversation partner. Those of you who follow my channel carefully know that. Because Rafe has sort of embodies, I mean, so Rafe's father, what's his name, Sunbeam? So that gives you a sense of Rafe grew up in sort of a hippie commune, not fundamentalist Christianity somewhere like some of you, or not Roman Catholic and not purely secular, but sort of a hippie commune. And then, you know, took the deep dive into Sam Harris and New Atheism, and then was sort of, you know, shaken out of that by Jordan Peterson. And so now he's very much in the thick of Vanderclay and Peugeot and Vervaeke and what we're trying to figure out here. But Pichot very clearly, part of what's good about that conversation is Rafe is good at getting down to some essentials and really helps Jonathan, I think, speak very well. In order for a community to coalesce, there needs to be something above it that is sufficiently clear so that the people around it can coalesce and sort of Voltron up. All right? And so now we're going to be looking for another Vervaekian term, relevance realization. Okay, what exactly is the thing at the heart of this lost world that Barry Weiss and Jordan Peterson are lamenting? Now, again, both Barry Weiss and Jordan Peterson have in their getting kicked out of and in their pushing back against the previous regime, the previous liberal regime, have garnered a whole bunch of conservatives in their wake, and conservatives who are appreciative because the enemy of the enemy is your friend. But neither Barry Weiss nor Jordan Peterson are in many ways conservative, but they're conservative now because what they want to do is to preserve this liberal establishment. But that question about liberalism has been going on for a long time. And so you've got elements all along the way. No, we should preserve it here. We should preserve it here. We should preserve it here. And so, of course, you know, gay married Barry Weiss wants to preserve it after Obergefell, the Supreme Court decision. She talks a little bit about that. So you've got all of these trailing conservatives along the way, and there are temperamental reasons for that. There are personality reasons for that. And of course, you've got the Jordan many times in the video, you know, sort of scopes out her personality type and says, well, you're low in politeness you're low in agreeableness, you're low in politeness, but you're high in conscientiousness and you're high in compassion. And so that sort of makes up who you are. And, you know, she'll probably, if she takes Jordan's personality test, we'll see. But they're sort of working on this. And of course, in time, politically, socioculturally, as certain clumps of conservatives, you know, gain momentum, it'll put brakes on the people who are at the progressive end of things pushing in a certain way. And that's part of what we're seeing. We're seeing critical mass develop. But now what's coming from her is going to be an impassioned zealot's plea, which is fascinating because, again, you can only really coalesce the group if you don't have something to circle around, Jonathan Haidt, if you don't have something to coalesce around, if you don't have something to look up above it and draw you in, you will continue to be a reactive community and you will continue to be, in that sense, all of the dynamics will be parasitic. The only identity you will have will be anti-woke. And woke is, of course, the identity of anti-capitalist or anti past order or anti-structural or something like that, okay? So you don't want to have a reactive identity. So you're going to need to articulate that thing that you circle around. Now, it's important to note that she is not a priest. She's a journalist. And journalists have a particular part to play, but in many ways, towards the end of this, you hear her with a missionary cry.
So I am extremely interested in what I've been referring to. Like, how do I make a common address for that sensibility?
Okay. She's looking for the thing around which her community can coalesce because they're going to need to institutionalize. They're going to need to instantiate in a corporation, in a church. Again, back to, maybe I should just play it. I've got it on my Clips channel. which I almost turned everything in this video into a clip. I still am a little torn on what to do with my clips channel, because if I just take clips, YouTube doesn't like that just clip taking anymore. But then I'm making little videos, and of course, once I start talking, little videos become big videos. So I'm still figuring out what to do with my clips channel. Anyway, so I played this recently, but it bears hearing again, because, you know, we might imagine Alistair McGrath sort of sitting back like you did to Brett Weinstein and say, you know, it's almost as if you want to start a new religion.
I wanted to start maybe with Tara's point about sort of the durability of this kind of, I'll conflate your two points and say the durability of imminent individualist religion in American life, right? And the fact.
And now this isn't imminentist individual religion. This was a religion that the New York Times used to be a platform to maintain. And I've talked quite a bit in my videos about platforms and about how, in many ways, the church platform has been deeply disrupted. And that disruption has been going on since the time of the Protestant Reformation. In many ways, the Protestant Reformation was a deep disruption of the church platform. But yet this church behavior, this congregationalizing and institutionalizing, I mean, this, of course, is deep within the Protestant ethos, because Protestants then form churches.
The fact that you have plenty of, you know, divination and God within spirituality going back to the 18th century. It seems to me that if you look at sort of the historical pattern in American life, you have sort of either surges of that kind of spirituality or particular religious geniuses who manifest it. And then the movements and institutions that they build have historically then been sort of pulled back towards a kind of normative Christian structure or framework, to use Steve's account, right? So, you know.
Now, think again, I brought up Billy Graham for the last 3 years talking about Jordan Peterson. Billy Graham didn't found a church. Billy Graham surfed on the waves of churches. Christianity Today became, in a sense, the New York Times of evangelicalism. He had a practice of crusades, and in some ways he used churches and churches used him. It was a symbiotic relationship when he came to town. And of course, there are many aspects within Christianity that afforded such a thing. But Billy Graham didn't found a church. We don't have the first church of Billy Graham or Billy Grahamism or Grahamism or any of those things. And that, I think, shows a fundamental shift in platforms.
To take the examples of the two biggest 19th century examples, maybe, are Christian Science, which comes out of New Thought in certain ways, and Mormonism, which gets its start in the sort of, in, you know, the kind of divination happy world of upstate New York in the early 19th century. And both of those, you know, if you look at them from a sort of, you know, how Christian are they perspective at the outset, you can make a case that they're both pretty stark departures, maybe not getting all the way to something we call paganism or post-Christianity, but clearly really stark departures. You know, in Mormonism's case, you know, you mentioned polyamory, right, as a feature of the contemporary political landscape. Early Mormonism goes all the way to polygamy. And then, over the course of the next 100 years, you get to a point where, by the time of the 1950s and 1960s, both Christian Science and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, while they're still regarded as heretical or dangerous or cultic by some other Christian denominations, are, I think, reasonably seen as connected to a kind of, you know, a kind of Christian tradition in.
So Christianity has within it this certain auto-correcting feature. And again, this is where, Jordan Peterson talking about ideology versus religion is helpful, because these ancient religions have deep resources that we are not aware of, that sort of, you know, Douthat's point is that they're sort of pulled, you know, Christian Science, Seventh-day Adventists, you know, 50 years ago were much more of a sect. Increasingly, Seventh-day Adventists are just sort of another evangelical church that meets on a funny day of the week, okay? Mormons, you know, conversations with Christian leaders, Christian Reformed philosopher Richard Mao, Jehovah's Witnesses, there's this, you know, sometimes Jehovah's Witnesses would come to my door, and if I had a little time and I was feeling a little trollish, would sort of just sit down and act like a normal guy and then start asking a few peculiar questions about their personal ideas around issues such as the Trinity. Now, I wouldn't say the word Trinity because I would be exposed for what I was doing, but ask some more questions about, you know, the resurrection and Jesus and the life of the age to come and 144,000, and, you know, because I knew these things, and in some ways I was a little better prepared than the foot troops that they deployed to the door. And, you know, I did this in my own way, not to try to flip them or expose them or belittle them, but I want to know how much the foot soldier of the Jehovah's Witness is actually up on the finer distinctions of their religious system. But then again, there's plenty of sloppiness. I mean, I've spoken before about the Gnosticism in American evangelicalism. I think dispensationalism has taken many churches in a poor direction. So, but again, back to the institutions, of course, Jordan Green, is it Greenhall or Green or Hall? Jordan Hall, you know, talks about Blue Church. And in many ways, New York Times is the platform of the Blue Church. And at one point, Barry Weiss talks about the fact that there's this purifying element to it. And she decries the fact that the New York Times, in many ways, sort of analogous to Fox News or Donald Trump or, you know, AOC, you know, what's happening is that everyone has to appeal to their base. And the easiest way to appeal to your base is to use fear to antagonize, to draw bright lines, to polarize. And so part of what Barry Weiss is lamenting is really the lost, consistent haze of bright secularity
in American life. And there's clearly an aspiration, at least among parts of the leadership of those what become those churches, to move in that direction. And what that hasn't, it seems to me, one thing that's been different since the 60s and 70s, right, is that that hasn't happened to the same degree, right? So we've gone through the sort of Marianne Williamson presidential campaign, which unfortunately has not won enough support to merit the fascination that I've applied to it. But I feel like a 19th century version of Marianne Williamson would have started a church, right?
19th century version of Mary Williamson would have started a church. What does Barry Weiss want to start? Blue Church 1.0 instead of present New York Times being Blue Church 2.0? So she's not tinkering with platform, but this is sort of what we're after here.
That independent-minded spirit. That, you know, is not like
independent-minded spirit. Is there really any such thing? Alan Jacobs wrote a book about thinking. And we always admonish people to think for themselves. That's sort of the proselytizer's cry. Because what I'd really like for you to do is to think like me. But now she pushes back, and rightly so. There's a great segment in this where both she and Peterson agree that in many ways what the individual with authority, and now there's another Rebel Wisdom video that I watched that I want to bring in in some ways when I treat that segment of their video. And that's why this is, I thought about just sitting down and muscling my way through this entire video to do a commentary on the whole thing. But there's so many other pieces I want to bring in because this video touches on so many of the issues that are currently at play. Do we ever really think for ourselves? But now the good mentor, let's say, and I thought Weiss and Peterson were dead on right in this, the good mentor encourages even the heterodox thoughts of the mentee because the good mentor understands that this is a part of the developmental process. And I've talked quite a bit in my videos about how deconstruction isn't always a bad thing. There's differentiation in terms of childhood development. It's a necessary stage of, you know, you, if you want to find true zealots, look at fifth and sixth graders. They're usually just true zealots. And as Joey from the Discord server and from the local meetup notes that in some ways, it's sort of this, so many of the present revolutionaries in the social sphere are actually deeply conservative because all they're doing is mimicking boomer rebellion. And it's like, is that conservative? If Steve Jobs stands on stage and says, accept no dogma, and then you say, I accept no dogma, to what degree are you just bought into the dogmatism of Steve Jobs? And we're sort of in those inversions right now. And of course, Peugeot talks about those in good ways that we're in these strange loops right now. And, you know, Akira the Don had this great line of how much more naked can Madonna get? You know, at some point, the hot girl is the one who has clothes on. And the really, the real revolutionary, the real radical figures out how to stay married and faithful to their spouse and not get divorced and live out till death do us part. That's the real radical. You say, well, wait a minute, that's a traditionalist. Well, it's that circular inversion we have going here. So Barry Weiss is, she's looking for the essence around which she can coalesce the sacred community. That's what she's looking for. And, you know, my conversation with Cale Zeldin and Brett Sokold, where they were talking about how, you know, when John Paul II became Pope and then Benedict after, a whole bunch of them thought, you know, in some ways, this is the end of history. Our church will always stay with our present regime in it. And the same letter that I read on one of my previous videos,